You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. For today's episode, this is Friday the 5th. It's an off day for the Rockets coming off the loss Thursday night to Golden State. Back in action Saturday night against the Pistons in Detroit, the start of a two-game road trip. So it feels like a good spot, an off day in the schedule. The first 2 days, or games, I should say, without James Harden after going down with a grade 2 hamstring injury that's clearly caused a lot of tactical schematic changes for the Rockets. So to break down what we've seen these first two games, I'm joined by a good friend of mine and a friend of the program, actually a guest host from a couple of months ago. I'm sure you guys remember him, Ali Bajani. He's on Twitter at Rockets_insider. One of the best minds in the Rockets community, as far as I'm concerned, amongst journalists, at not just reporting, but actually understanding basketball from an X's and O's perspective, film studies, whatever you want to call it. Ali is a very bright guy, and I'm always thrilled when I get him here on Locked On Rockets. So first things first, Ali, welcome back, man.
How are you guys doing? Oh, Ben, how are you doing?
pretty well. I think we're all a little tired after last night. It was a fun game, exhausting, but and not the outcome that I think we hoped for, but certainly an entertaining one nonetheless. And there's a lot of angles you could look at it from, but certainly the Rockets, these first two games without James Harden, it's been a back-to-back at Orlando, which is a bad team, home against Golden State, that's an elite team. But regardless, you've had a pretty decent sample, and in those two games, you're averaging 115 points per game. So in terms of how you replace James Harden, well, clearly they're doing a few things right. And the two guys that I want to discuss first, and you can essentially take this as a two-part question, are Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, and essentially how are they being used now? Because clearly with Chris, he's sliding into your number one option role to where every night now he's your primary facilitator. When he's on the floor, he's the focal point from opposing defenses. You even had Draymond Green guarding him for long stretches last night. Eric, of course, is sliding back into that starting guard role that he had for the first 14 games that Chris Paul missed to start the year. So it's not too new to Eric, but at the same time, it's a role he hasn't had in a month, and it's the first time he's been in that role not playing next to James Harden. So both of those guys, we're only two games in, but it's been, at least on offense, two relatively successful games. What are you seeing in terms of how Mike D'Antoni is using those guys differently?
The first things first is obviously the minutes. Last night, what happened was that Chris Paul played the first 9 minutes the first quarter, came out with 3 minutes left, came back in with 9 minutes left in the second quarter, played 18 minutes that first half. Same thing pretty much happened in the second quarter. So we're seeing essentially him getting a break to end the first and start the second. And during that time, that's Eric Gordon's time to run the offense. Now, both of those guys are running the offense a little bit differently. So when Chris Paul's on the floor, the Rockets offense is usually how it's always been ran. They'll run double drag, staggered screens, they're on spread pick and roll with Clint. And last night with the Warriors, Warriors are playing a little high on those screens, so Chris Paul had a couple assists to Capella early on to get him going. And Capella had some nice finishes inside, by the way. He's leading the NBA in field goal percentage. And when it comes to Eric Gordon running the offense with the second unit, that's where we're seeing the biggest difference with the Rockets. In fact, I know it's only two-game sample size, but Eric Gordon's usage percentage is above 30%. So clearly the Rockets are using him a lot more to run the offense, and he's actually done a pretty decent job, you know, all things considering. Last night, he got matched up a lot on switches. Klay Thompson was guarding him, but he was great. When it came to field goals itself, he was 12 of 24. He was 2-9.
Sorry, guys. Briefly lost Ali connection issue. Hold with me for just a second while I get him back on. Ali, you back on now?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. So you were, when you left off, you were talking about how even though Gordon shot just 2 of 9 from behind the arc, obviously he scored 30 points, shot 50% from the field, and where I think you were going with that was how successful he was driving to the bucket.
Yeah, so if you take away the 2 of 9, it was essentially 10 of 15 from the field, and most of those were on layups. He got matched up on a lot of switches, and he really finished well inside through traffic, and that's what you want to see from Eric Gordon, who's really finishing well around the rim. there were a couple possessions. I know people will say, oh, Draymond's still coming back from his injury, but Draymond's still a defensive player of the year kind of guy. And he really utilized his quick first step and beat Draymond multiple times yesterday for layups through traffic. So that's a very encouraging sign. And what I was saying is there's a predominantly one set Rockets are running with their second team. It's their 21 series action. And for those listening who don't know what 21 series is, it's basically the offense revolving around your point guard and your shooting guard. So the one and the two on the floor. And what that is the offense starts with them and usually ends with them. And with the Rockets, as you've been seeing a lot of pieces have been released lately on their offense, they're amongst the bottom of the league in assists. I think they were 18th before Harden's injury in assists per game. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're not a historic offense. And the reason why is because they don't need a lot of passes to get into high percentage situations. All they need is that initial action, which is something the 21 series does. So essentially you have your point guard handing off to your shooting guard who comes around a screen or a dribble handoff and then and starts the action. So with Eric Gordon in the second unit, he's basically starting the offense not as the guy bringing the ball up the floor, but rather catching it, coming around a screen, coming on maybe a second screen from a big, and either driving, shooting a three, or helping, you know, spread the floor a little bit, putting the shooters in the right position and attacking. And he had 7 assists last night, and he had a couple assists the night before as well. So he's producing well for this offense in the absence of James Harden. I think that will continue. The biggest question mark, and I alluded to this on Twitter before when we found the injury occurred, is can they sustain this level of production with Eric Gordon as the ball handler, primarily for second unit? Ben, we were watching the game last night. The Warriors went on that run to start the fourth quarter. The Rockets were -8. They were -8 when Eric Gordon was the only guy on the floor running the handling the basketball. He also had Ryan Anderson and Capella with him there, but nobody else to essentially lighten the load when it comes to being that secondary ball handler that Eric Gordon already is. And I think that's the biggest issue that the Rockets will need to continue to address as they'll go an extended period without James Harden.
We're talking now with Ali Vajani, Rockets insider on Twitter, works with ESPN Houston and also covers the NBA nationally for FanSided. Ali, Paul and Gordon are the headliners because they're the guys who, well, biggest names in the absence of James Harden, and their roles have been adjusted the most. But let's move on to the more fun subject, which is Gerald Breen. He's one of those guys in that second unit, certainly not a ball handler, but is meant to at least provide you some of the scoring punch, some of the attention-drawing ability that you would normally have if you had, of course, Harden in the starting lineup and Eric Gordon in that role off the bench. So, first off, how incredible is this run? Gerald Green, you know, just signed 8 days ago, and in his last 4 games, he's scoring 21 points a game on 58% from behind the arc. Just ridiculous, including 29 against the Warriors after throwing in 27 against the Magic the night before. Obviously, he's a very likable guy. It's a great story with him being a Houston native. You can see that, you know, from throwing up the H to wearing the Earl Campbell jerseys pregame, everything about him is Houston, so it's a wonderful story. But from a basketball perspective, how are they integrating him this well so quickly? Certainly, he deserves a lot of credit for making the shots. But Gerald, he's not really a ball handler, and that's, you know, you could fairly say that's a bit of a weakness, as you pointed out, in those minutes with Gordon early in the second, especially early in the fourth quarters. But it does seem like there's a lot of off-ball activity in terms of the screens. He seems like a very aware guy, and so part of it, of course, is that he's making shots. But the other part, it seems like he is working hard to get open, and the Rockets are doing some things to free him up. So just from an X's and O's perspective, tell us what you're seeing from Gerald Green in this first week. And how the Rockets are using him.
Yeah, the Rockets are essentially using him the way they would use Trevor Ariza coming off those curl screens. And a lot of them from the right side of the floor. So whichever end they're playing, he's coming off these quick hitters, quick hammer screens set by Tucker, stuff like that, where he's just coming off quickly, catching and shooting. And Ben, you were there yesterday pregame in the locker room. I actually approached Gerald, and I'm like, you know, Gerald, 10 of your three-pointers have been assisted by Chris Paul. You know, can you explain that kind of chemistry that you guys have? He's just, you know, I work really hard on working on my catching and shooting, and just wherever somebody throws the ball to me, I'm just working on whichever really catch point that is, making sure I get that same release point, making sure I have my mechanics down pat. And, you know, working with Chris Paul, I mean, the guy's going to put it right in your breadbasket. I tweeted this out against in the Magic game, you know, Chris Paul has his unique ability to know how his players want the basketball and find it right when they're about to transition from the dip into the release. And you're seeing that a lot with Gerald Green. He has really nice mechanics on the catch and shoot. Chris Paul is getting it to him right when where it needs to be. And he's shooting well. I know I tweeted this out yesterday. He's shooting, I think, 50-something percent on catch-and-shoot three-pointers in the first week as a Houston Rocket. I mean, that is absolutely incredible. And when it comes to his three-pointers, 63% of his three-pointers are assisted. I mean, that's an insane stat.
Is it fair to say that the quick release is especially important in this system? This is just me thinking out loud. But when you have two passers that are as innovative as Chris Paul and James Harden are and are able to find it to you at all times, it seems like, you know, when the Rockets scout shooters going forward, maybe a lesson to take out of this Gerald Green, it's not just the raw percentages, but it's how they get those percentages. And even though we're talking about just fractions of a second here, it just feels like that Gerald is able to gather himself, his mechanics, and release a split second more quickly than a lot of other guys are. And with the Rockets system, especially at the pace at which they play and some of the daring passes that guys like Chris Paul and James Harden try, it feels like maybe that is even more important in this scheme. Is that a fair observation?
No, I agree with what you're saying as well. And I think the biggest thing, Coach D'Antoni talks about it, players talk about it with Coach D'Antoni. He puts them in the best position to be successful. And the biggest thing is you want to be able to be in a position where you take these shots, have a quick release, and like guys like Trevor Ariza, he has a high release point that helps him get the better shots off. So you're seeing a guy who can fit really well with the system.
Yeah, I would say certainly to this point it's the perfect marriage. Certainly he deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing, and the Rockets are just playing off of him beautifully. It's amazing how great the chemistry seems. You know, there have been guys that have been here for years that don't seem to have the exact fit, the seamless fit, and that's why I loved Woj in his postgame comments yesterday. I transcribed them on my Twitter, at Ben DuBose. We talked about Gerald Green not just being a fan favorite, but a favorite in the locker room. Somehow, he's been here for 8 days, Ollie, but it feels like, you know, he's been there for years. That's how great the chemistry is. And just talk about that vibe very briefly, because I know you were in the locker room just like I was yesterday, but it just seems like, you know, whereas normally you have a new guy coming in, there's an adjustment period. One of the things about Gerald, and I think it's reflected in that chemistry on the floor, all those guys, maybe it's his veteran status, maybe it's that, you know, they know him from being in Houston, but for whatever the reason, there's no adjustment at all. He just came in and it feels like he fits both on and off the court like a glove from day one.
You know, Coach D'Antoni said it yesterday. You know, he's like, thank goodness we got him. You know, he's turned into their sixth man. He's played well. And Coach D'Antoni said, yeah, now he may not be the best defensive player on the team, but he gives energy. He provides it yesterday. He got beat a couple times yesterday by Curry. But on the other hand, he still had great energy. I know I noticed that in my notes piece on Patreon. He had a situation in the third quarter where he was massive on Iguodala on switches. Multiple times Iguodala drove on him. But Green's length really made it an issue. His energy to stay in front made it an issue. He caused a couple turnovers there in that third quarter. So, you know, he may not be the best defender, as D'Antoni said, but if you have that energy, you're going to find playing time. And Coach D'Antoni honestly trusts him a lot right now. And Chris Paul said it himself. He's from Houston, and you can see it. And Chris Paul said, like, it's a little bit different. And the energy he's bringing to the team is much needed, especially with James Harden out. And, you know, we were in the locker room yesterday. From the guys who aren't players, the coaching staff, the guys who just work in the locker room with the equipment, he's always having fun. He's always talking to them. Everybody always sees a smile on his face. He's bringing a smile on other people's faces. He's a great fit in this locker room right now.
On the phone now with Ollie Bajani, Rockets insider for ESPN Houston and also fan-sided. As we wrap up this show, let's transition to the other side. We've spent the first 10 to 15 minutes talking a lot about what has gone right on offense when they've scored 115 points on average these first two games without James Harden. However, they're only 1-1, partially because they played Golden State, but the reason they lost to Golden State, of course, well, they gave up 124. Defense was an issue last night. So you talked about it briefly with Gerald, but I want to talk more bigger picture, your thoughts on what went wrong last night. And for me, certainly I was disappointed in the defense, but I have a tough time getting upset or getting angry by it. And to show you, you know, I guess the distinction I'm trying to draw, when you look at the Lakers game Sunday and then the losses a couple of weeks ago to the Lakers and the Clippers, those were games, in my opinion, where even with the injuries, the Rockets, their focus was just not there. They were not sharp. Whatever you want to call it, they just did not bring their full attention to those games. Last night, I felt like, honestly, the attention to detail was pretty good. I thought they wanted the game. I thought they played hard. What I felt like last night was that it had more to do with an absence of personnel. Because where the Rockets really got exploited in this game, it was specifically up front. You mentioned that stretch early in the fourth quarter when Ryan Anderson and Capella were out there along with Eric Gordon. That's when the game really got away. And you know that against Golden State, first off, Ryan Anderson is always going to be a bit of a liability in this particular matchup. I think that's why the Rockets went out and got P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute. And with Clint Capella, he was better, had 15 and 10 in 28 minutes. But at the same time, there are always going to be stretches against Golden State, especially that depth lineup with Draymond Green in the middle, where it's tough to play traditional centers. So that's why the Rockets went out in the offseason. If the Rockets want to compete with Golden State, they can't just win a shootout. They've got to disrupt the Warriors to some degree from what they want to do. And so that's why you brought in P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute, two guys that are very flexible, versatile, can switch on everything. And when you look back at the recipe that won for the Rockets in Oakland earlier this year, that was with P.J. Tucker playing 30 minutes, scoring 20 points, also had the winning points in the final minute. Luke Bamute also gave them about 25. Those two guys were huge. Whereas flash forward to last night, Luke Bamute is still out with the shoulder injury. PJ only played 22 minutes because PJ's in his shooting funk, and when he's not scoring, he's too much of an offensive liability to leave him out there for too long defensively. And so to me last night, was it frustrating? Yes, they lost some guys, but it felt like it just kind of, to me, came with the territory. If they helped overly on the drives, there was going to be someone open for three. If they overplayed in the perimeter, then there were lanes to the bucket. But it just felt like, to me, if Luke is not out there and PJ's minutes are limited, there's only so much you can do against a Warriors team with this many good shooters, that much elite ball movement. To me, last night was less about issues of focus and more about just personnel deficiencies. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I know Coach D'Antoni, and he was very upset with the defense. And in my opinion, I think when he goes back to Washington film, yes, there were a lot of defensive breakdowns, but I think there were also some defensive like positives you could take away. One thing was, especially that first half, I was sitting next to Kelly Eco, and I was telling him, man, you know, they're doing a good job on Curry for the most part. And I obviously, for Stephen Curry, this dude, I mean, it's incredible to watch him in person. He's moving through the entire half court position, the entire shot clock. And the Rockets did a great job of communicating, switching all the every single screen. So if he was coming on a loop, they switched it. If he was doing he was trying to set a back screen, they switched the back screen. So basically disrupting his rhythm and his player movement. If you disrupt his player movement off the ball, it makes your life easier defensively because you're essentially having the Warriors play one-on-one on the other half of the half court. And so they did a good job there. And I think that's a good takeaway to have, especially with guys like Ariza and Tucker and Gordon can stay with Curry when they're switching those off-ball screens. One thing I did find a little bit worrisome is the shot by P.J. Tucker. The Rockets want to play five out, and they were very successful, especially towards the end part of that first half. They played five out, and if those listening don't know what five out means, five out essentially means you take out Capella from the floor, insert P.J. Tucker, have him as your primary screener for Chris Paul, and essentially just run pick and roll with three shooters outside, and then you run pick and pop outside. So instead of P.J. Tucker rolling inside, he would pop back out for the perimeter and help force a one-on-one mismatch for Chris Paul. And Chris Paul had that. They ran a little bit 21 series at the end. He got some switches. He attacked Patrick McCaw, as we saw on all those crossover montages on Twitter, and got layups inside. But at the same time, they're going to come in the playoffs where the Warriors make an adjustment. Hey, P.J. Tucker's not hitting shots. They're playing five out. Let's trap Chris Paul. Let's force him to give the ball to P.J. Tucker. Let's force him to beat us. The Rockets played that same exact thing to Andre Iguodala yesterday, and Andre Iguodala had a couple of air balls from three. So that's going to happen, if not in the regular season, especially if these teams play which we expect them to in the postseason, where they're going to trap and blitz these ball handlers, or they're going to switch, and it's going to be up to P.J. Tucker to help either make good decisions on the roll or knocking an open three, which I don't think he's made more than one field goal in the past seven games.
Yeah, it's been a long dry spell for him, and both PJ and Ryan have been shooting in the mid-30s in terms of their percentages since the start of December. That's over a month, so it's just a dry spell, and with the bar as high as it is to compete with the Warriors, it's just difficult to win that way. And then, of course, you factor in not having Bob Mute's length. I would think not having Luke's length, his high IQ, I would think he's a particularly pronounced absence for this particular matchup as well. Agree?
Yeah, and the thing with Luke is he's just like Tucker, where you can put him on a guy like Draymond and David West on switches, and they can't punish these guys inside. There were a couple of times yesterday where David West got a switch onto a smaller guy switching that second quarter, Ben, and he just finished over them just because he's a taller guy, he's able to finish. Luke is a great low post defender. I think that's one thing that's very underrated about Luke Mabute. He's a very good low post defender on switches, and whenever you have Ariza, Tucker, and Mabute on the floor at the same time, the opposing defense is going to try to run pick and roll and spread you out, but the Rockets can switch and basically stymie any type of offensive action. That's such a big, important weapon to have. But the problem with that is, if you're a guy like P.J. Tucker, you're not hitting three-pointers, then essentially, when you're trying to trade baskets with this team, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But Ben, one thing I want to get your thoughts on, because I noticed this yesterday, and I asked Capella and Clint Capella and Tarek talk about this pregame, and it's going to be a part of the big feature, film study feature I'm doing, is the way the Warriors and other teams are defending them. And I think the Rockets did a great job yesterday of actually attacking this type of defense teams are employing against them. And if you're listening, just follow me for a minute, stay patient. I'm going to explain what I'm talking about. So what's going on with the opposing teams is they're essentially taking away the three-point shooters. By that, I mean, the Rockets like to run spread pick and roll. We know this. Capella sets a screen. Chris Paul, James Harden goes over and attacks inside. But what teams are starting to do now, a la Spurs from last year's series, they're basically, the Rockets like to have two guys in the corners and a guy in the slide in the wing. So what the defenders are doing, they're staying with those shooters, and they're essentially playing 2-on-2. So what that means is James Harden, Chris Paul's defender, is going over the screen set by Capella, and then Capella's man, the big, is staying way back inside the paint, zoning that out and forcing Chris Paul or James Harden to shoot that mid-range jumper. And I think one thing that's very encouraging, especially with the addition of Chris Paul, James Harden, yes, he's a very good shooter, very good at finisher around the rim, but he struggled a little bit, you know, with his floater, and he struggled a little bit attacking guys with bigger length and finishing over them when he extends his arms. Chris Paul yesterday, however, had a couple possessions where he used a snake dribble, which means he starts the left side on a pick and roll that goes right. And what that does is that basically forces a big to make a decision. Are you going to step up and switch onto Chris Paul? And if you do that, then you get the switch. Or if you're not going to do that, are you going to give up a mid-range upper to Chris Paul? And Chris Paul was very successful attacking that yesterday. He got a couple good looks in the mid-range, knocked that down. He had to switch a couple times and basically licked his chops and finished with a layup or a three-pointer. So I think that's very encouraging to see for me, especially when you're talking about a type of coverage that the Rockets will see multiple times come postseason.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I actually thought Chris Paul could have even been better. If you look to the start of the game, there were a couple of mid-range shots that are normally layups for him that he missed. Now, of course, he eventually got going. But even early on, of course, he was very successful with that snake dribble, and the mid-range shots eventually got going for him, and he was 5 of 10 from behind the arc, which is tremendous. But yes, I thought Chris looked very sharp attacking that yesterday. Offensively, obviously 115 points speaks for itself, but beyond that, certainly the three backcourt guys that we've talked about, Paul, Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, they all had their moments. If there's one nitpick I would throw out there offensively, Ali, it's, you know, you mentioned Capella, you mentioned Tarek Black, those guys going to combine 2 of 8 from the foul line. That's really hurt. I felt like in a couple of stretches where, you know, the Rockets tried to go big because, you know, you want to go big against the Warriors if you can. And I thought Capella did a better job than he did in game one against the Warriors in terms of moving his feet on switches, being active. I thought Tarek Black brought good energy as well. And there were times when they were active around the bucket and they got the Rockets second chance points, which is always important against a team that's this good. But unfortunately, part of the reason they went to that small ball lineup, those two guys only went 2 of 8 from the line. And if it's as simple as, you know, even if they get every rebound, all of a sudden, if they don't convert the free throws, then a team like the Warriors is just going to foul them and send them there. And all of a sudden, it just felt like more than anything, Mike D'Antoni was boxed in yesterday, because wherever he turned, you know, you mentioned PJ, and the same thing applies with Luke. Defensively, they're key to this matchup, but they have to give you enough offensively to be playable. If they're not, then maybe you can try and play bigger. The Rockets were a little bit better yesterday at playing bigger with Capella and Tarik than they were in game one, but they didn't make free throws at a high enough clip. And so that's why, you know, I know we're turning our focus back to offense a little bit, because I think that's probably more controllable for the Rockets than the defensive stuff. But yeah, it felt like it was just a weird game, and that, you know, Chris was brilliant, as you were saying, certainly Eric and Gerald, but in terms of who to put with them, especially down the stretch, it just felt like no matter where Mike turned, there was some sort of deficiency. And then, of course, in many of those, there's a trade-off. You go big, it makes you more vulnerable defensively. And then, well, hell, even when you do trust PJ, he has not been the best defender over the past month either. So it just felt like a game yesterday in which Mike D'Antoni was a little bit boxed in. Is that a reasonable assessment?
Yeah, and it goes back to how you started the podcast with when we were talking about the personnel deficiencies they had. When you're playing Golden State, obviously Kevin Durant is there, but when he comes back, you have Kevin Durant, you have Stephen Curry, you have Klay Thompson, you have Draymond Green who can hit the three, and then you have Andre Iguodala in there as well. And what are defenses going to try to do? Rockets, we're going to try to force Andre Iguodala to make that corner three. Now, with the Rockets getting Chris Paul, now you have Chris Paul, Aaron Gordon, James Harden, and then now you have a decision to make. D'Antoni can choose between two or four guys. They can put in Capella, they can put in Tucker, they can put in Mabamu, they can put in Ariza to finish out their version of the death lineup. And I think, with, like you said, alluded to, it's going to come down to who's playing well in that specific game. It's very, I think it's very contextual. Because if you have Ariza shooting well, obviously you want him out there to space the floor, and then maybe you want Capella out there to be a rim runner. So I think when the Rockets are healthy, you're going to see the Rockets' own version of that lineup come to fruition, because then you have multiple options. There's a reason why, as we always keep saying, I know it's been overstated, but there's a reason why P.J. Tucker was brought in, Luke Bamute was brought in, giving the Rockets and the coaching staff more options to deploy against a lineup that's going to feature Kevin Durant and other guys who can shoot the three at a very high percentage.
Yeah, and Trevor Ariza going 1 of 8 yesterday hurt. I think the odds are, if you get everyone healthy, I think what the Rockets are hoping for, you get an entire lineup healthy, and while you might not have everyone clicking at one time, between Trevor, Luke, P.J., Ryan, Clint, you at least have a couple of those guys going to where you can mix and match and, you know, at least ride the hot hands. Last question before you go, and this kind of ties into this. Gerald Green right now, there's an obvious fit for him in the rotation without James Harden and also without Luke Bamute. Long term, it's interesting. If Green keeps playing this well, and when I say this well, of course he's not going to keep shooting 58% from behind the arc, you know. But when, if he continues to be an above average shooter, give them the length, the quickness that they desire on the perimeter, and he could get even better. Hell, he's blown a couple of alley-oops in the last couple of games, still trying to get his conditioning better. I think he can be a factor in terms of running out in transition once he gets more legs underneath him as well. But long-term, it's tricky, because you go back to as recently as mid-December, when they were towards the end of that 14-game winning streak, 20 of 21, this was legitimately a 9-man rotation, and that's not even counting Tarik Black. It's a 9-man rotation with two centers, and then Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, and Luke Bamute off the bench, in addition to whoever that second center is. So a nine-man rotation is pretty long in the NBA, and usually Mike D'Antoni throughout his career plays an 8-man rotation. Occasionally, he'll go to 9 if it's justified, and thankfully it has been for large portions of this year. But with Gerald Green, there's not room to play 10. So I'm just curious, you know, we're speculating here, but it just seems like there's a few options. First off, if you do make a trade before the February trade deadline, it makes it all the easier to potentially do a consolidation move if you can move two players for one in terms of an upgrade somewhere. But then beyond that, he seems like a useful hedge to me, that if Ryan continues in this funk that he's in, or with the same can be said for PJ, if one of these guys that's been shooting in the mid-30s for over a month now, just for whatever reason, cannot turn it around, then maybe Gerald Green is that hedge. And of course, you're not going to literally see Gerald Green at the four spot the way you do Ryan Anderson, but of course, theoretically, you could play Gerald Green more at the wing, and then that frees up Trevor Ariza, who, by the way, shot just 1 of 8 last night. That was definitely a factor in terms of some of those lineups not clicking down the stretch. But, you know, if you play Gerald on the wing, then you can also free up Ariza to play more small ball four. So just curious your thoughts on where Gerald fits in long term, be it from enabling a trade or just simply being a hedge on some of these guys like Ryan, PJ, that we just keep inevitably saying they've got to turn it around.
You know, my theory is that, and I could be wrong too, but my theory is that I think Coach D'Antonio started to realize, hey, it's a long season. My guys are getting injured. It's one of those fluke kind of years where even James Harden, for all we've taken for granted for him, he's got injured as well. It was probably his first series injury. So I do think that, yes, he may not necessarily go to a 10-man rotation, but I think he's going to trust 10 guys. And I think that's more important than anything else, where he trusts 10 guys. You know, there's been times, Ben, where we've seen this, especially last season, he only trusts 8 people.
Yep.
Now you add in a couple free agents, you add in a guy who we just signed off the street, he trusts him. I know the first person, it was late in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, the Warriors were making a run. Who's the first guy he pulls up off the bench before anybody else? Gerald Green.
Yep.
So that trust factor is there, and I think that's the biggest thing. It's not necessarily a trade or anything like that. I mean, that could possibly happen, but my theory is that, hey, D'Antoni is trusting these guys, and I think that's going to pay more dividends in the long run. I mean, does that mean they're going to lessen the minutes? Because ideally, he only wants Harden and Paul to play 32, 34 minutes a night. But, I mean, that remains to be seen when he comes back, when James Harden comes back. But that trust factor, I mean, that's going to go a long way, especially for health for the rest of the season.
I think so, too. And, of course, you know, as much as it's been a little bit painful the past couple of weeks with all the losses, you make a good point that potentially there is an end game here. If you can keep these guys fresher, and then, you know, with James Harden naturally getting 2 or 3 weeks off in the middle of the year, as much as it hurts now, maybe there is an end game in that, you know, all this stuff you're going through and then finding another rotation piece in Gerald Green, maybe that gives you the freshness that you didn't have in May a year ago when towards the end of that San Antonio series, it just looked like James, Trevor, and a lot of those guys just sort of hit a fatigue wall. Ollie, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I completely agree. I think that the fatigue factor is going to play a major role. Ariza continues to play a lot of minutes, and I think when this team gets healthy again, hopefully that helps. I mean, yesterday, Ben, he played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He played 9 guys again last night, right?
Yep.
He's starting to press Beyonce a little bit more as well. So I think the best case scenario for Rockets fans to think about it this way, and that's why I'm saying it, the trust factor is going to play a large role. Is he going to start trusting these guys enough where he can expand that rotation when he needs to? He can start resting guys a little bit as well. So we'll see.
Good point, and that would strike right back at kind of the conventional narrative that Mike D'Antoni's not willing to do it. Well, maybe he's not willing to do it because he hasn't had the personnel. With Gerald Green, in addition to that 9-man rotation you had all the way through, and yeah, let's even throw Briante Weber in there as well, because certainly, especially defensively, he's flashed plenty over the past week or so. So maybe, you know, the knock isn't completely fair. Maybe Mike is starting to get the type of guys that he can trust to where now that's becoming viable to actually play along the rotation and have some of these guys fresh come April and May. Ollie, thanks again for the time, as always. Before you go, I want to let you plug your newest venture, because, of course, folks know you from Rockets_Insider on Twitter and ESPN Houston and FanSided and all the people you've worked with over the years. You do great stuff. But now you and Kelly, y'all have launched a new venture, and it's one that I really want to see succeed because, of course, it's a subscription-based model, and, you know, if you can make subscription models work, that makes it all the easier for quality journalists like you guys to give the requisite time to breaking down these games. So I know you've got a Patreon thing going on. Go ahead and plug it to our Locked On Rockets listeners. Tell us where you can find it. By the way, the link will be in our story over at LockedOnRockets.com. And also just kind of give people the background on the business model and what you're trying to do.
I'm not going to lie. When I first started looking into this, I was like, are people going to sign up? And it's been a slow process, but I really feel strongly about what me and Kelly are doing. Essentially, just to give you guys a little bit of background about me and Kelly, we're both undergraduate students. We both attend the University of Texas at Austin, and we're both very passionate about, you know, the NBA and covering the team. I can speak for myself. Whenever I write, my goal is to always inform and educate fans about their team, and specifically in this scenario, Rockets fans. one thing I like to pride myself on is I'm one of the few guys I feel like who really concentrates on the X's and O's of the team. I watch a lot of film. I usually watch every game over again, right? And I take notes, detailed notes throughout the game. And essentially what Kelly and I are starting is we're doing two things. We're starting a Patreon page with $1 a month and $2 a month subscription. And essentially the $1 a month is basically thank you for supporting us and all the content we'll be putting out. The $2 a month is where you get a lot of other goodies, whether it be detailed game notes after a game with video, whether it be special features, getting player quotes and insight. Essentially, it's a way for you guys to be rewarded with some great film study content. I was mentioning in the podcast, I talked to Gerald Green last night and doing a feature on him. I talked to Tarik Black and Clint Pella about the way opposing defenses are playing them. I'm going to have that in there as well for $2 subscribers a month. And I know $2 a month is still, it could be a lot to some people for our journalism subscription, but I would really ask for your help and for you guys to subscribe. The second thing Kelly and I are doing, we're starting a YouTube channel. So we're okay. A lot of fans have been asking, hey, you know, there's no Rockets YouTube channel for film study content. Well, we heard you guys. We're going to start doing that as well. After every game, I'm going to be doing a play of the game on YouTube where I basically break down my favorite set from the night before for the Rockets. And actually, the one for last night will be up in the very, very soon. And I basically share all my notes and game notes and breakdowns on the Patreon page as well. So if you guys want my notes, you guys want my analysis, you guys want to be able to continue to learn about what the Rockets are doing as they prepare for a deep postseason run, I just ask for your help on subscribing to my Patreon page or at least subscribing to our YouTube channel. It's Rockets Insider with Ollie, Khan, and Kelly. That's the name of the Patreon YouTube channel as well. I know Ben was actually our first subscriber for Patreon, so we are much in debt to Ben for his great gratitude. So we hope you guys can subscribe, and we're looking forward to producing great content as the season progresses.
Yep, absolutely. I'll vouch for you guys. It's great content. I read the update yesterday because this week especially, it's a great time to talk X's and O's as we've done for the past 30-plus minutes because without James Harden, we've all got a lot of questions. James has barely missed any games at all since arriving here in October 2012, and you guys do a great job of, you know, explaining it in layman's terms to make it understandable to the average fan. So that's why I really enjoy, you know, you guys have a gift in breaking it down, making it simple. So I'm happy to support you guys. And of course, like I said, it's especially useful now because, you know, with James out, we all have a kind of a natural curiosity of, okay, how is this going to work? But even long-term, longer than that, it's something that it just makes you a more informed basketball fan and helps you to understand more, you know, the decisions, what Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey are looking at as they make their decisions to shape this roster and the product on the floor as we get forward and closer to May and June and hopefully a prolonged playoff run that involves a Western Conference final series against these same Warriors. Ollie, thank you so much, as always, for the time, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon at Toyota Center. Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Ollie Vajani at Rockets_Insider on Twitter. Good guy, great friend, very knowledgeable basketball mind. Always happy to have him here on Locked On Rockets, and especially on an off day where we can talk a little bigger picture, trends, what we're seeing. And as I said, this off day with James Harden, this being the start of the era without James Harden, hopefully only a 2 or 3 week era, but certainly a few more games nonetheless, felt like a good time to pick Ollie's brain about what we're seeing. So until the Rockets are back on the floor tomorrow night in Detroit, I will leave things right there. As always, if you want to follow me or the show on Twitter, you can do so at Ben Dubose or at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us if you've got any questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries. That's LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Also, LockedOnRockets.com is the website, and Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets is our Facebook page. We're going to have some live Q&As in the days ahead. So please, if you're not already liking us on there, do so, because I think you're going to be pleased with some of the things we have ready for you in the days ahead. As I said, tomorrow's game against the Pistons starts a brief two-game road trip. That's the Saturday night game, and I look forward to talking with you guys about that on Twitter, and then, of course, shortly after the game right here on Locked On Rockets for our usual post-game spot. Until then, folks, it's Friday. Hope you guys enjoy the weekend, get some much-needed rest, and then, yeah, we'll be talking basketball again Saturday night when the Rockets visit the Detroit Pistons for the start of a two-game road trip. Until then, folks, enjoy your weekend. get some rest, watch some football, and then, of course, Saturday night, let's get right back to the Rockets, and we'll be breaking it down on Twitter and then post-game right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.